Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. While the architectural expansion and renovation continues at the National Music Museum in Vermilion, National Music Museum Live welcomes award-winning cello virtuoso Cameron Crosman to Farber Hall in Old Main on the campus of the University of South Dakota. Now, Crosman has performed all over the world in a variety of settings. The Canadian artist, now living in Paris, has been named Canada's next big cello star by CBC Music and the 2019-2020 Classical Revelation Artist of Radio Canada. Crosman's National Music Museum Live performance begins at 7 p.m. tonight, local time. And right now, it's our pleasure to welcome him into our SDPB Vermilion studios on the University of South Dakota campus for Moment in Sound. Cameron, thanks for stopping by today.
Thank you for having me.
We've got you crammed into a pretty tiny space with your cello there, but you are hopefully going to play for us here in a moment. But first, if you could preview tonight's program and to tell people a little bit about what they can hear when they stop by.
Yeah, so tonight's program is really, in a way, a celebration of music for solo cello, which spans the last 300 years, really. So I go from music written at the end of the 1600s, all the way to a piece by Ludovico Einaudi, who is a composer, a living Italian composer today. And in the middle, I visit some of the sort of monumental works for solo cello, suites by J.S. Bach and also by an English composer named Benjamin Britten.
And you have played in all kinds of different venues. Tell us a little bit about why that's important, because this is maybe not an unusual venue to you, but it's not where National Music Museum concerts would normally be performed. Talk about some of the more interesting places that you've played, whether it's a revelation for you acoustically or a real challenge.
Well, definitely. I think that, you know, all artists really are so, I think that space is so important to us, but particularly for musicians, the sound is shaped by the space we're in. And at the same time, the energy of the audience is also often shaped by the space we're in. So I've been very fortunate. I've gotten to play on some of the world-class stages in the world. I remember doing a short recital at the Philharmonie de Paris, which is their big, 2,000-seat concert hall. They had me do a little pre-recital before the orchestra concert, which is crazy, right? Playing in this enormous theater. And then at the same time, I've played in, I've been really enjoying recently going into more unusual venues in Canada, whether that's like a brewery up in Newfoundland or some wineries. And that's really fun too, because you pack out this brewery and you're playing classical music and everyone's so excited to be there. So there's the two sides of that, and I think both of them are fantastic and great experiences.
In a digital world, we have seen, sort of experiments of, classical musicians, really amazingly talented musicians, just playing in the subway and being ignored. Or Yo-Yo Ma sort of playing as part of a cultural expression in a certain moment, a political expression, for example. How do you sort of see that then? You mentioned not only the sound, but the people around you. What if the people around you are not paying attention in some of those circumstances that I just mentioned? Or can it mean more when the people around you embrace it in a certain way?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's always the challenge with music in particular, because unlike when you go look at a painting in a gallery and you can choose how long you pay attention to it, with music, once you're at the concert, it's happening, right? You're there. And ultimately, I think that you have, as a musician, you have to come to the realization that it doesn't actually matter in a way how much someone's paying attention. What matters is that it touches them somehow, however small that might be. So even if someone's walking by, I know the famous story, Joshua Bell playing in the subway in New York.
Right,
and
yeah.
Even if someone's walking by and isn't paying attention, maybe just for a moment, it made them think about something, or it cleared their mind, or it made them feel something. And I think that ultimately is the goal.
Sort of like gravity works on you whether you believe it or not.
Exactly.
Maybe that music does something to you whether or not you stopped and took in the full moment. Oh, that's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned, some of this music, 300 years going back. I'm wondering what kind of venues solo cellists would have been playing at a couple hundred years ago. What do you know?
Well, I know that it's something I've been fascinated by, because having lived in Europe, you get to see, you actually get to play in some of these places, whether they're, you know, 14th century churches or princely palaces or things like this. The music sort of over in Europe is very well defined, and in North America, it's fascinating to see how, I think anyways, to see how music first came here. And I know in Canada, for instance, the first classical music performances in the early 20th century happened at the railway hotels.
Really?
Yeah. And so this has been, again, it's this whole fascinating thing where, you know, I think ultimately the music needs to happen in a place where it can bring people together.
Yeah. All right. Well, now music is happening on South Dakota Public Radio. So it's bringing people together from across the state. You haven't been here before, have you?
This is my first time in South Dakota.
So welcome. And it's many people's first time unless they've heard your recordings of listening to you. What will you play for us first?
So I'm going to start with one of the real quintessential pieces of music for solo cello. This is the prelude from Bach's First Suite.
If you are just tuning in, you're listening to Moment in Sound with cellist Cameron Crosman. You can see him tonight for National Music Museum live performance. That's at 7 p.m. on the campus of the University of South Dakota in Farber Hall. So beautiful. And
thank you.
An iconic piece, but I'm sitting here in the Sioux Falls studio listening and looking out, a little bit of snow flurrying against the autumn leaves, and a really great audio and visual picture. So thinking of all the people across the state right now who are listening to that, looking at their own sort of weather patterns.
Yes, exactly.
As that happens, it takes you to a different place. Yeah. Tell me about your recording, the French music recording that you have recently done.
Yeah, so this was sort of, one of the challenges for any artist, I think, is, you know, what, especially a classical artist, because we don't write our own music for the most part. We have to play pieces that other people wrote. The challenge is always, what do you record for a first album?
Right.
And for me, I feel like I was lucky because I, having studied in France, but also not being French, it sort of became very evident to me that I had to make a CD of French music. And I know my friends in France were always very jealous. They said, you know, you can do this because you're Canadian, but we could never do that because it's the cliche.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, because of course, you know, it's too easy for the French people to do recordings of French music. But it was, for me, it was okay. And so it was a real sort of testament to what I love about French music and my time in Paris. Almost all of the music on that recording I had worked with cellists over there. So very personal in that sense.
Yes, and you are with Philip...
Philip Chu.
Chu, yes. Thank you. I just lost his last name. Philip Chu.
And he's a phenomenal collaborative pianist in Canada, one of our best.
That's remarkable. Tell us a little bit about, now you can consider a recording. You are playing at a certain level that is receiving accolades and, awards, recognition, invitation. And yet, you've also played with and collaborated with and played for some other, masterful cellists. Mm-hmm. You have a strong sense of history, and I'm wondering how you feel about your place in history, or contemporary cellists, more broadly, a contemporary cellist today who's playing at your level. What's the role of sort of these, we know these people, we know Pablo Casals, we know Yana Starker, we know Jacqueline Dupre, or, whoever.
For sure.
What's next in that dialogue? Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, that is the question. I think that is the challenge of any sort of young musician like myself living in this age is you always run into this question of, what do I have new to say?
Right.
And I think the reality is it's actually because we're all different people, there's always, as long as you're being honest with yourself, there's always something new to share through the music. And otherwise, I think that, I think with the new era comes, Pablo Casals is such a great example because he was someone who music was really a vehicle for peace for him. And I remember there's some quote from him that really stuck with me that is about how he said, what truly defines a talent is not that you have it, but how you use it. Hmm. And he really felt strongly about that. And now I look at someone like Yo-Yo Ma and everything he's doing here in the U.S., but also internationally. I think that's a very noble goal anyways. And it's something I definitely always have in my mind that music does have the ability to bring people together. And it's sort of our duty to use it for that.
Yeah. How has that found its expression in you? Are there areas that you care about deeply that you try to bring awareness to? Is it about listening to people as you go places? How do you sort of grapple with that?
I think it is that what you were saying, for me, it's an amazing way to meet new people and visit new places. And it allows me to see the world. And I hope that then informs, that's something that I can then, down the road share with future generations. But, even just being here, it's crazy. I was driving up from Omaha this morning and this has been in the back of my mind to come to Vermilion for like years now. And to actually be here is incredible. And that could happen thanks to what I do seems really, magical, actually.
Right. And you have so much ahead of you, too, as that is how do you sort of define your next chapter?
That's a great question. It's something I've been thinking about a lot. Yeah. I spent the entire last year. So I actually moved back from Paris about a year ago, and I spent all of last year more or less living on the road, which was great. But now I've decided I'm settling in Montreal, back in Canada. And so for me, the next chapter is a lot more sort of also figuring out now how do I reintegrate into the culture of a city like that and of my country, and also continue to explore the world and see what kinds of projects I can create that might be interesting for people to hear.
Yeah. Tell me about your cello, and then let's talk about how you travel with it. So tell me about what you play now.
So right now, I'm very lucky. I have a cello on loan from the Canada Council for the Arts Musical Instrument Bank. This is a cello made in Spain, actually, in Barcelona, around 1769. So it's about 250 years old. And it's made by this maker named Joan Giammi. Very mysterious. We often think of old instruments as being Italian, Stradivarius, right. Del Gesu, Amati. But turns out there was a very, very fine school of Spanish instrument making in the sort of second half of the 18th century.
How did you know it was one that you wanted to choose to play?
That's one of those questions that's almost impossible to answer. The bank has multiple. I had a choice from the bank. There's sort of every 3 years they hold this competition open to young Canadian violinists and cellists. And so they have about five cellos. And so you do the competition, you get a sort of picking order, and you get to play the cellos and choose which one you want. And
that sounds so nerve-wracking.
Oh, it is. Well, and this was actually my second loan. Before this, I played on sort of the crown jewel of the collection, which was a Stradivarius cello.
Yeah.
from 1696, the Bonjour Stradivarius. So I couldn't have that instrument again. So I had to sort of look at the others. And it really was a matter of that this cello had a voice that spoke to me.
Yeah.
Which is challenging coming from a Strad, especially.
And then how do you travel with it and protect it and figure out how to do, you know, to do what's right by its history as well.
Exactly. Well, traveling with a cello is always an adventure. especially on planes, because we always, even in the contract for this loan, we have to buy an extra seat for the
right.
cello. So yeah. It always gets to travel in the window seat. So it's been very long since I've gotten a good view out of a plane. And it's funny, actually, with a couple other cellist friends of mine, we were joking. Every now and then, of course, we get to take a vacation and maybe you get to go on a plane without a cello. And we're always joking. We're saying, I don't know how this is difficult for anyone. It seems so easy.
Right.
But it's just because we're used to this, you know, sort of nightmare headache challenge.
Exactly. All the looks people are giving you in. Yeah.
Well, it'd be one thing, you know, if you could just go on. Generally, you know, if you're just buying a flight ticket for yourself, you just go on the website and you buy a ticket and it's all good. But because the cello is not a person, you can't always do that. So
right.
often it means many hours spent on hold on the phone trying to make sure they put it in their system correctly and all these things.
Well, this is a moment in sounds. I'm hoping you'll play for us again. What will you play next, please?
Yes. So I'm going to play one of the earliest pieces ever written for cello. This is a Ricercare, which is sort of a very free improvisatory piece by an Italian composer named Domenico Gabrielli. And I think it's interesting, you can really hear how he was just discovering this instrument that was the cello and trying a whole bunch of things on it. I hope you enjoy.
Fabulous. Cello music on Moment in Sound today from the great Cameron Crossman. He's a Canadian artist, renowned, and he's playing tonight at the University of South Dakota for National Music Museum's live performance. That's at 7 p.m. tonight. You can check that performance out. How did you, you know, we talked a little bit about some of these things that are, this is a high pressure. and I'm wondering, you know, from being a kid and you know, auditions and competitions and then getting into conservatory and you know, all the different times that pressure is on you. Talk a little bit, if you will, about learning to handle that as a young person. You know, even how old are you when you start playing?
So I was 7 when I started, yes. And I'm 24 now.
Okay, so some of those early experiences with handling pressure and nerves, and then I want to pivot a little bit into just the rigors of the life that you've chosen and that you've chosen, and how do you find joy in that? So start with just this notion of, you know, being a little kid, really, and figuring out, like, you know, I've got something here that that I could take to a place if I can learn how to handle and how to survive it as well.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is when you're a little kid, in a strange way, because you haven't sort of developed that sort of fear of what other people think yet, it seems.
Nice.
I remember when you're very young, you just go play. It's just something you do. And then it's as you get older, actually, that you start to worry more and more about, oh, well, what do people think about this? What do people think about that?
Yeah.
And at the conservatory in Paris in particular, it was always a very high-pressure situation. You know, they do things that you could never get away with in North America, where after exams, they would just announce the results in public. You know, you do your end-of-year playing exam, and they just announce in the middle of the school. They'd say, okay, so-and-so got this mark, so-and-so got that mark. And then they'd print it all on a sheet of paper and post it on the wall. So anyone in the school could tell how everyone else did. And, you know, not just in playing exams, in history and analysis and all these things.
Oh, wow.
Too.
The shame, the potential shame.
Exactly. And I think that you're either the type of person that really doesn't work in that type of environment, or it sort of really pushes you. And for me, I was lucky that it worked out. Like, I was able to work through it and get to the other side. But yeah, there's always pressure. You always sort of need to, especially now in the digital age, you never know what's going to be broadcast, how long it's going to stay around. And you always need to sort of have in the back of your mind that awareness that, you know, you always need to be on, which you should be anyways. But I think now particularly it's even more so.
But I'm also wondering if I've noticed in a younger generation a willingness to be imperfect and silly and unattractive, and that, it, you know, you're so used to being on that you're like, well, you know, I can't be on all the time, so I'm just going to be me. And that's kind of embraced, and clearly not from a performance standpoint, but from a life, you know, you're human just like the rest of
us. Well, I think exactly. And I think we're definitely coming around to that. In music, it's been difficult because of recording technology. You know, you can make a recording and it's perfect. And a live performance is never going to quite be like a recording.
Right.
There are some people out there that are phenomenal and they can do that, but we're not all sort of cut from that cloth. And that is something that is more coming, something I had to come to terms with, in a way that I can always try to do my best. But the reality is, you know, I'm not always necessarily going to give a performance that is 100% what I want. And that's a good thing, because
otherwise, what would
I work on?
Yeah, yeah. I like that as an audience member. I like that better, because I feel like I was there for a real thing, a real moment.
Exactly.
Anyone can listen to a recording.
Exactly. And I think there's something interesting about the live performance where, although, yes, things can go wrong, there can also be sort of the heights of energy of a live performance, which can never be replicated.
Right. And then if you record it, you're like, no, you watch it later and you're like, you had to be there. There was an energy in the room that was palpable.
Yeah.
Play one more for us, please. One more piece.
Okay, one last piece. This is a little bit to do with my cello. This is a piece by a Spanish cellist and composer, a student of Casals, named Gaspar Cassado, and this is the prelude from his suite for solo cello. Thank you.
Thank you.